So I can hold up the phone to a sign and I can get the translation right away, but I don't get cultural context. I don't get connection. I was fortunate to have a guide next to me who helped me unpack what I was reading, but I got the translation. I could follow along in the museum just fine, but I wasn't placed in context. I wasn't in a space where I was really connecting with the culture that presented this artifact, that curated this artifact. Communication just being, this is our fundamental skill as human beings. We communicate. And that is something that is lost so fully when we simply rely on technology without any kind of guide, any kind of connection.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Lawrence Pasca, Executive Director of the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages, or ACTFL. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Joanna.
Larry, tell us about ACTFL.
So we are a professional membership association. We represent world language teachers, researchers, professionals in multiple settings, K-12 schools, colleges and universities, as well as other nonprofit and for-profit organizations. We count over 10,000 members worldwide, including in many different countries. And we actually are an offshoot of the Modern Language Association. We were born from them in 1967 to represent the interests of the K-16 teaching force a little bit more directly, but we do maintain close ties with them along with many other associations that focus on language learning.
So Larry, it's 2025, you know, there are language teachers all over the country. Why would they join ACTFL?
I always think of an association as the original social network. So long before Facebook and TikTok and X, we had associations. We came together to be together, to teach each other, to learn from each other, to solve problems together. And that model, hundreds of years later, endures. And it will continue to endure. It will continue to thrive. And so why you come together is because you may be in a school that offers a dozen different languages. You may be in a community that has 100 different languages spoken in it. And yet your needs are not much different from a teacher 3,000 miles away in a similar setting. And we come together to share, to learn, to network, sometimes to cringe, to advocate, but we still need that power of connection. What I love about the language education space is we represent kind of all languages holistically. We focus on standards for quality learning. We focus on language proficiency. And there are also associations for individual languages. Like there's a language association for French teachers, for German teachers, for Japanese teachers. And so those are our partners in addition to, you know, they're supporting the needs of specifically a French teacher, but we also work together to holistically support the needs of the profession itself.
So Larry, do you try to promote the teaching of foreign languages, and or do you try to help your members become better teachers?
We do both. So advocacy is core to our mission. Our biggest areas of advocacy would be on ensuring that there are language learning programs in K-12 schools, that our colleges and universities are training people to be language teachers. That's core to our work. So ensuring the programs are there, ensuring that the teaching workforce is prepared, that they have the training they need, that's both as they enter the profession, but also throughout the profession. One thing we do is we also develop standards for teacher preparation. We do that through the Council for the Accreditation of Educator Preparation, or CAPE. We're very proud of that affiliation because that helps us to work with colleges and universities, review and approve their programs, and hold up as models of national excellence programs that are preparing language teachers in what we think is the best way possible.
So is foreign language teaching offered in every school district in the country?
It should be. One of the things that we do at ACFL is we do conduct some research using available national data samples and such on, we call it the state of world language education in K-12 schools. And you'd be very surprised that the data is not always there. And if it's there, it's not always as complete as we'd like it to be. So we don't always have an accurate reading on the total number of language education teachers nationwide. Part of that is because some teachers may be teaching other subjects. They might be doing more courses in social studies or another subject and teaching a language class. So how that's reported. We do know that Spanish, French, to a lesser extent, German, Japanese, Chinese, other languages kind of in descending order are most common in our schools. We would want to see language learning at all grades, both formally and informally. And what I mean by informally is, you know, even in an early childhood setting, that you're offering an experience where students are getting to learn a language. But I would say the data is very incomplete for us. And we do see that it's more common in a middle school or junior high school setting and a high school setting, in part because there are graduation requirements where a student may need to take at least 1 year of a language in order to graduate from high school.
Larry, when I introduced you, as the executive director of the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages, or ACTFL, but you're not really the spelled out name anymore.
Right.
You're ACTFL. So tell us why.
So in 2020, our leadership was really, I'm trying to unpack the meaning of the term foreign and thinking that this is a term that, does it sound like a barrier to progress? Is it a word that sounds like strange or different or unfamiliar? How do we recognize, for example, indigenous languages that are still spoken in the United States? Are they foreign?
Ah.
Is American Sign Language foreign? So our brand, our acronym is a well-regarded brand in our field. Educators know ACTFL. They know that acronym very well. That's synonymous to them with language learning. And so we made a strategic decision to keep the brand, add a tagline of language connects to it. We believe those two words demonstrate how language is the bridge to cultural competence, to career readiness, to empathy and understanding, to inclusion. And we felt this more accurately represented who we were, and it would enable us to become seen as a global leader in our profession because we were identified as the connector through language.
Wow. Well, we got a lot to talk about, but let's turn to your journey. So Larry, how'd you get to become executive director of ACTFL? Because you have a winding journey.
Yes. So I first started as a classroom teacher. I was a middle school social studies teacher for about 6 years. Social studies was my heart and my passion. I think it was in fifth grade. I was studying the U.S. presidents in class and just decided, boy, I really love history and I want to teach social studies. So I went to college just knowing that that was my path. And you know, a lot of times in education, you start to look at your own career growth and where would I go? And so you get your license to be a school building leader or a district leader, like a superintendent. And for some reason, I interviewed for a position at a state education department as a curriculum and assessment specialist in social studies. So rather than becoming a building principal or a department chair for social studies, I ended up coordinating social studies in the state of New York for several years and worked on the Regents examinations and worked with educators across the state on developing test items and editing them, worked on our social studies standards. You know, we would get calls from educators all over the state asking for help about curriculum guidelines, and we would do training for teachers. And one of my closest partners in all that work was our state council for the social studies. We had a non-voting seat on the board as state education reps, and we always had this mantra, you don't want to do work without checking with teachers first. You must check with your teachers, work with them, collaborate. And so I started to see through those years the power of associations. And in another position I held at the state education department, I worked closely with an association for state educational technology teachers and coordinators. And again, the power of association, these are the voices. You would meet with them, you would learn from them directly. And when I left the state, I called our state social studies council. He was past president at the time and said, hey, you know, I've left government service. I'd like to get involved. How do I get active in the association? And as happens to many of us in leadership, whether CEO or on boards, we often get pulled into, well, we have an opening for vice president. Why don't you come in right now and join the board? So, okay, trial by fire. And over the course of 3 years as a volunteer, I found that was my night job, but I loved it.
Ah.
It was exciting. We were restructuring an organization. We had $20,000 to our name. We had convention bills coming up. We weren't sure we could pay. We didn't have a strategic plan. And so sitting with an executive committee and being able to restructure the organization, rethink how we would do its programming, I just noticed I was putting so many nights and weekends into this and loving every moment. Through that work, I became aware that the executive director position for the National Council for the Social Studies was open. Their long-serving director was retiring. And I was encouraged by a lot of my peers, hey, you should apply for it. And it didn't dawn on me that, wait, you can get paid for this work? And
Wow. You
can actually like impact a profession nationwide? Like, I just was amazed at doing this work statewide. So I applied. I think at the time I was kind of an unknown, but I ended up getting the position and relocated to the Washington, D.C. area and spent 8 years in the position and grew. And
wait, so hang on. Your very first association job was as an executive director?
Yes.
That's amazing.
And I didn't know what ASAE was. I will tell you that. Like my first few months, I had a wonderful staff. And so one of my team members said to me, like, you need to join ASAE. They have this thing called a CAE. You should look into it. And I'm going to set you up with, like, you're going to come to some luncheons and meet people and get to know this industry. And I was enthralled. I said, there's a whole industry of practice around this.
Yeah.
Didn't know. Like when you're a classroom educator or when you're working in a state or you're working in government, you wouldn't necessarily see the side of things. So I just became enthralled and I thought, wow, what better place for an educator to be than in an association? Because again, we're connectors. We're all about training people, uplifting people, making, I hope, the world a better place through our profession. And so to me, an educator fits really well into an association, but it's not a natural path. And if I were to do, you know, like career days with others or things, I would encourage them, think about a nonprofit association as a career path for you, because it's not one you traditionally think about as a teacher, but so many of the skills that you do in working with students, classroom management, getting them prepared for the world out there translate so beautifully here.
You were at NCSS for 8 years and you've been at ACTFL for almost a year. What's that like to be in a second association job in kind of an adjacent field, still teaching? What do you think of the association space now?
So what's unique about ACTFL is we have a mission that is, in my mind, so encompassing that it enables us to achieve it in multiple avenues that just being a membership association alone wouldn't do. So we're about promoting leadership support for quality teaching and learning of languages. And there's so many ways you can do that in addition to providing support for a K-12 teacher, a college professor. We conduct some limited research. We also develop language proficiency assessments in many languages. And these are assessments that you take to demonstrate your proficiency in a language that can be very helpful for you in your career path. One of our strongest grants and contracts that we have is with federal agencies. So thinking about civil service, thinking about people who are choosing a career dedicated to civil service, the military, they need to demonstrate their language proficiency for everything from career advancement to maybe working in an embassy somewhere or just having a job that requires a multilingual background. We provide that. And so the big jump here is both moving kind of adjacent from one content area to another, but moving to a content area where the work itself focuses not just on the K-16 experience, but really on career workforce preparation in general. And then all the different things that go into that, from developing a language test to advocacy for language learning, to research to promote quality programs, all of that goes into that mix. And so it's a big responsibility, but I think bringing a worldview of here's what continued lifelong learning is about, because that's what we as educators focus on. And now let's apply it to a setting that encompasses so many different program areas of responsibility to achieve that mission.
So you develop assessments for language proficiency so that if I'm going to work for some state agency in California and they need me to speak Spanish, I need to demonstrate proficiency. Are you developing the assessment or are you offering the assessment?
We do both. We develop our assessments. We partner with a company called Language Testing International. They are our exclusive licensee for our assessments. So they will do the administration. We also do quality control of our assessments. We offer our assessments to both a K-12 space, to post-secondary. As I mentioned before, we have government contracts where we'll work with government agencies. We'll work with private corporations. We also do professional learning around language proficiency. So we will certify people as testers, as language testers, as well as language raters. So it's an entire body of work built around the notion that we promote proficiency in language as a way to achieve our mission.
And is this revenue generating for the association?
Yes. It's actually a significant portion of our business. I would say that between our multiple grants and contracts and the royalties that we collect on assessments, that this is upwards of about 2/3 of our overall revenue. And so again, kind of unique because it doesn't seem like it fits the focus of a traditional membership association, but what it does is it expands on our mission. I really believe it enables us to deliver on the outcomes of what happens when we focus on language learning, because you want that goal of proficiency as an outcome of language learning. And we have a way to measure that, to assess it. And what I get excited about is we have a way to help people with a career path, with their own lifelong journey, where being multilingual is important to them.
Well, what I love about this is you're not just the community of the foreign language teachers, but you're the organization that's advocating for it and actually enabling the teaching of the foreign languages. So it totally makes sense. It also makes you have kind of a business side to the association and generate significant non-dues revenue, it sounds like.
It's important to us. And again, we put it back into our mission because it enables us to put together more programs and services that, you know, again, starting right at the base of how do we support a K-12 classroom teacher as they're teaching students. We also have a separate foundation, the Language Connects Foundation, where we are working constantly to raise the profile of language learning by offering scholarships for teachers, scholarships for students, different opportunities where people can access both ACTFL and the language profession, the language learning community in general, through different opportunities, even things like small research grants. These are just the little ways that we try to invest back into our profession. And I think the proficiency testing component really shows there's an outcome to language learning, that there's a measurable outcome to it, and that's your growth.
Ah, well, I want to dive into AI. Your website says that AI is transforming language learning. So tell us about that.
It is transforming language learning in that, I'll give you an example. I was in Taiwan earlier this year, holding up my phone in a museum to a description and having the phone instantly translate all of the words. And then the guide I was with reading and describing to me what I was reading and looking at it and saying, that's a perfect translation, yikes, you know, or so many of the software programs out there that can teach us language really quickly. It is transforming. We can ask questions and get answers instantly. We can get translations instantly. And yet, what we can't get, and where I think this is where the educator's experience is so important, and where, you know, again, bridging the informal and the formal, would we want all kids in language learning software and their car rides going all around? Absolutely. That's great. That's wonderful. Anything it takes to get you motivated to learn a language, we're excited about. But there's also the formal experience, too, of being able to work towards proficiency, being able to be guided well by an educator, you know, using the latest research on how the brain functions and thinks about languages. That's where we see the possibilities and the challenges. So we're about how can we make something work for us better in classrooms? Does AI enable us to offer language experiences that we couldn't currently offer? That's a good thing. Does it replace educators and replace formal experiences that help you get to proficiency in your learning? That's where we're challenged. So I think in the coming years, we're going to be working really hard to show that for every opportunity, right, there's always a challenge. And I think our role as an association is to figure out how do we incorporate something that's new and exciting, but maybe untested in a lot of ways? How can we build research around it? How can we build what good practice might look like around it? And how can we give our members the tools to succeed as members who are trying to build proficiency? What would that look like? And Those are the questions we're trying to answer. I would have to say for myself as an association executive, I don't use AI. You know, I know there's a lot of creative ways people use it. I don't throw my board meeting agendas into it. I don't type up notes or minutes. I don't write emails through it. I try sometimes, and it's personal style. I just have a way I communicate that I don't see. I end up editing a lot of my own work doing that, but that doesn't mean there aren't good uses for it. And I know ASAE had a lot on this.
Well, I'm thinking about how, like, I'm a big Duolingo fan. And what I'm fascinated by is every once in a while, they'll throw in a practice your weak skills. And so I guess through AI, they know where I'm weak. And so I thought that's pretty cool. If I'm really strong in vocabulary, but I'm really weak in past tense, then they're going to double down on past tense. And so maybe AI helps you personalize the experience and complement the work of the teacher.
Yeah. I think in the end, for us, the experience of language learning is really rooted in kind of the second half of our vision, which is both a multilingual and a multicultural world. So whatever avenue allows us to really embrace language learning and proficiency is really a marker of just being connected throughout the world. Again, going back to our tagline and the notion that language is a connector. And as humans, we just naturally seek and desire to connect with others. We're hardwired to do this. Tools that help us do that are just that. They're tools to help us. And I think part of our responsibility as a professional association is how do we work with all the various tools that are out there in meaningful ways that help us achieve what we're trying to do. These aren't tools to replace a teacher or replace work.
Right.
But they're tools to assist. And that's where we're just in the stages of figuring out what this could mean for us. We have a special interest group devoted to AI. We have members that actively share presentations and content with each other on what this could mean, hopefully productively for a language class. But again, we always start with the position of this isn't about replacing. This is about expanding our toolkit in a productive way.
Yeah, 100%. Now, I want to double back to something you said. You talked about a multilingual and a multicultural world. So those are words that people throw around all the time.
Yeah.
But what do those words mean at ACTFL?
So I think this goes to our embrace of language learning as something that just could happen beautifully throughout a full day. Let me take you through a school day, for example, and just imagining this for a minute, because there are types of programs out there called dual language immersion programs. And part of the goal is that you are immersed in your academic subjects while learning another language. So imagining that you are having your science instruction, your social studies, your math, all in Spanish. And so you are learning the content and the skills that you need in each of these disciplines, but you're also building your proficiency in another language at the same time. And then you may have a dedicated class in that language to sharpen the skills, to practice writing or, you know, understanding structure a little bit more. And so that's an example of, you know, we're in a multilingual setting. We are embracing multiple subjects together at once. And so we're building that proficiency of language, but also having a deeper understanding of the world through that. So how might a native Spanish speaker or French speaker or Chinese speaker understand the scientific concept or think about this historical era? And that's, I think, where the true bridge of language and culture come together beautifully, because we all experience food and music and literature in different ways. And it's based on that experience.
Yeah.
One thing that's often hard in our space, and I'm sure it is across associations, is us getting together. You know, in a school building, the social studies department chair and the English department chair and the math department chair, they all may sit near each other. And so they might be able to talk and share together. In associations, our offices may be thousands of miles apart. We may be all virtual. We may have great ideas together, but it's hard to implement them in a business plan. So I'd have to talk to my board about that and figure out how we could budget it. And so a lot of times our great ideas are great ideas and we connect with each other well and we network well, but implementing things cross content area wise can be a challenge for us. And so we like to see language learning as something that's both set in a school day and it's something all children experience, but wouldn't it be beautiful for multiple subject areas to come together through language, learning our social studies while learning it alongside Chinese? That would be a long-term vision, I think, for what school could look like.
Yeah. Larry, we can't really talk about multilingual and multicultural without talking about DEI And DEI is all over your website, which I say is rarer these days, I might say. So talk to us about this commitment to DEI.
So DEI is one of our five strategic pillars. And, you know, we envision DEI as you cannot talk about language learning without talking about inclusion, because the whole focus for us of inclusion is we want all to have access to quality language learning. We want all learners, no matter what setting they're in. Again, early childhood through adulthood to, you know, I am sitting in my car and I'm driving and maybe I'm taking a trip soon, or maybe I have a business appointment and I need to understand good phrasing, good things to say, or how to conduct myself. We want all to have access. And so a hallmark of access to us is inclusion. A hallmark of being a multilingual, multicultural society is embracing the diversity of our society, all the different ways that we think, feel, speak, act. So we intentionally have created this as one of our strategic pillars and do work around this to help both our membership as well as we hope the wider world see that language access is an issue of inclusion for us, first and foremost. And the equity for us is to ensure that all of our settings in which language learning can happen, they have the tools and the resources that they need to provide that quality instruction.
I love that you use the word celebrate, because when you're celebrating the diversity, then you're really taking advantage of all the things that come with it, right? And you're saying that there are lots and lots of good things when we are multicultural, multilingual, and diverse. Love that. Larry, I think a year ago, or maybe more than that, there was an article in The Atlantic that said, better learn a foreign language now before you don't need to because of AI. And you talked about going to Taiwan and being able to hold up your phone to a sign and not having to know Mandarin to understand the signage. So why should someone learn or teach a foreign language today?
So I can hold up the phone to a sign and I can get the translation right away, but I don't get cultural context. I don't get connection.
Yeah.
I was fortunate to have a guide next to me who helped me unpack what I was reading, but I got the translation. I could follow along in the museum just fine, but I wasn't placed in context. I wasn't in a space where I was really connecting with the culture that presented this artifact, that curated this artifact. Communication just being, this is our fundamental skill as human beings. We communicate. And that is something that is lost so fully when we simply rely on technology without any kind of guide, any kind of connection. But I'll also talk about it not just from that multicultural perspective or just from that human connection perspective. We also talk about it from an economic perspective. Regardless of where you live, every state in the country reports that something to the effect of 80 to 90% of the businesses that they have in the state require a multilingual workforce.
Require a multilingual workforce.
Right, that they need multilingual employees to run their work well. And about half of them have that workforce. And you think about that and think, well, I don't know. Everywhere I go, from the supermarket to McDonald's to the contractors in my home, I don't know, we all speak English. I don't understand that. Well, I'll give you a couple examples during that, because this is where it hit home for me. So in December, my family and I, we were in Fort Lauderdale. We went to a coffee shop in the morning, and it was a French cafe, and the owners were French, and they were clearly speaking French to the customer in front of us. So I said, bonjour. And then I said, you know, I'd like to order and place the order. He immediately pivoted to English with me. And then behind me, he started to speak Russian to the customer behind us. And I thought, oh my goodness. So I'm running a coffee shop, and part of my success is I knew to speak French to the person in front of me. I knew to translate to English because here's an American who's greeting me, but ordering it in English. And now I see a customer speaking Russian behind him, so I pivot. And that woke me up to this idea that we really have to be careful in just assuming that because we live in an English-only environment all day, or everybody we interact with is speaking English to us, it's similar to the idea of using something like Google Translate. We just can't assume that it's a one-language world. And then I think of when I do go through, if I'm going through drive-throughs or convenience stores or things like that, being able to even address somebody in their language, being able to greet them or offer help or thank them, it just eliminates a barrier. it helps to create a playing field where we're level together, we're working together. And that's where I think, even if you're in a community where it's mostly service businesses or things like that, they require people that can speak to customers in multiple languages. And customers will come back when they feel that they're heard or seen. Again, this isn't about being fluent or having a workforce that can speak 20 different languages.
Right.
It's about a workforce that's able to address the needs of its community. And that is nationwide. That is worldwide. And I think sometimes it's hard when you go through a day only speaking one language and you think this is the only experience others are having, therefore I don't need more. But the reality is our companies are telling us we want a better trained multilingual workforce because we need it where we are.
And that's the world that you're envisioning.
Yeah. And what's really awesome about it is it's not a hard world to envision or enact. It's being intentional about things like when you know you have a multilingual community in your school. So some districts may have, for example, 30, 40, 50 languages spoken in their community. The hard part is, how are some of those speakers able to come to the school? Can we get them certified as teachers or professionals that are in support positions in schools? What would that look like? How can we connect with these communities so that they not only have a place in the school and in that school community, but they might be able to help teach and might be able to help foster the language learning in broad ways? It's very difficult sometimes for schools to connect to the different people that make up their community. And that's one thing that we would advocate for fully is don't erase programs. Think about how you build programs that are inclusive and that reflect the people in your community and that you can maybe help uplift your language and celebrate a multicultural world at the same time.
Well, that is a beautiful vision, Larry. You've been there less than a year. You'll have to come back because clearly ACTFL is doing a whole lot. So let's have you back next year.
Would appreciate that. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of success to share with you.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.